DJ Event Planner will change the way you manage and run your business. Streamline all of your procedures and software into one easy-to-manage system. DJ Event Planner, the ultimate online planning tool.
All right, we're back for session number two tonight. Brian, good evening.
Good evening, John. How are you?
I am good. I am good. Now, one thing that a lot of folks don't realize is between shows, especially with between the Ben Stowe and the Brian Redd show.
We're all friends, by the way. We all get along well, know each other well.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a good thing we weren't live because I think we could have offended like potentially six or seven.
There was a 12-year-old kid in the room.
That's true.
Soon to be 12. I behaved myself.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I just gave good uncle advice.
It was. So tonight, instead of anything else, we're going to go with good uncle.
Advice from Uncle Brian. This is the version of me you typically don't see in the videos. So for those of you joining us for the first time, I'm sorry. It's a little different. And tonight's a special night because I am 1 hour away from being awake for 24 hours.
Holy
so
cats.
Yeah, it's just worked out that way this week. I've been involved in projects and I've had some really weird sleeping patterns. I tried to go to sleep early last night, but I woke up because I made this post on Facebook too. I think my dream was like directed by David Lynch or something. It was really twisted.
Yeah, I saw that you were.
And that was 10 o'clock last night. And I went to work in the shop. I'm trying to get organized here. And it's a snowball effect. As many of you know, you can't do one thing before you do this other thing, but you got to do that first. And so I've got stuff everywhere and it's keeping me from being productive. So I'm trying to wrap it up so I can get back to the DJ videos.
So we're going to start. We're going to be all over the board tonight. We've got a few things we're going to talk about. First off, Can you give us a verbal walk around of the basement? Because I've had people asking about because they see the dungeon.
Yeah.
And then they see pictures of your tools and different things.
Oh, that's actually, they're separate rooms. When I bought the house, what I did was, the wall I'm facing right now didn't exist. I built this wall.
Okay.
And it was to separate my work area from storage and laundry, which are two separate areas on the other side of this wall. So the toolbox and all that stuff is actually part of the laundry area, which is
down
on the other side of the wall over there.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's 10 steps away. But it's not far. And once I get it all done, I will do a video tour of everything, including the studio with the workshop area that shouldn't be a big deal. It should just be an easy thing to do. But I know my audience. As soon as I mention I'm doing anything, I better do something special or they're going to be disappointed.
Exactly.
So it's kind of pressure, you know? So I've got to kind of bring it and I've got to make it educational too. And there are a lot of people who aren't going to know about some of the things that I'm involved with in that area, the tools and things.
Yeah.
And I can do some walkthroughs. And, you know, I didn't even think to talk to you about it, John. You're like tool guy on the side.
I do a lot of the things with that. Mm-hmm.
So maybe once I get a little further here, I might consult with you a little bit. Okay. Maybe you know about some products that might be able to help a one-armed bandit like myself in the shop.
Yes. Yep, there definitely could be some options. And I also know we have some contacts where we can probably talk to them a little bit and see what they can recommend to
you. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I like doing that kind of stuff. You know, but then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to bed now. And then I realized, it's Valentine's Day. And I told Blanca that I'd take her to go see the movie she wants to go see tomorrow because we're broadcasting tonight.
Yes.
But there's no excuse not to buy flowers. So I went out and I bought flowers and that was a while. Then I came back and I was winding down and then UPS shows up with FBT Virtus CS1000s. And I'm like, well, I can't go to bed now. I got to set these speakers up. So that took us to dinner time. And then, you know, it was time to start thinking about, doing the show again. So
tell us, what are your thoughts? You've had some time to play with them now.
Oh yeah. Well, I played with them when I was over in Italy too but that was a room specially designed for sound and they sounded wonderful. I wasn't on the EQ much. The engineer Andreas was doing that and he did a wonderful job, and I just had one set up in the living room. And when I first turned them on, I thought, yeah, they're all right. You know, they're all right. And then I'd realized that I hadn't turned up the sub because there's a separate sub volume on there.
Okay.
And I also hadn't played with the DSP, and it was at minus 3 dB on the sub. So I put the sub at 0 dB, turned the amp itself at 0 dB, turned the sub up a little bit, set the preset to DJ, because that was the recommended one from Andres, the engineer. But yeah, these are pretty cool. And then I heard this hiss, and I'm like, well, this sucks. They're a little noisier than I really would hope. And then I realized the reason they were hissing is because my wireless mic channel was on my mixing board and my mic wasn't on, and I had to just flip the switch and the hiss went away. Some noisy mic channel, because sure, it was the mic on it. And wow, had some fun. My tunes that I was enjoying through them the most, 24K Magic, Bruno Mars. I like the song, and it's recorded very well. It's got a lot of cool lows in it, and a lot of cool like analog synths in it that I really like the bass on those. And then, of course, the vocals and some of the other effects. So it's a very well-rounded song sonically. I also did Knife Party Bonfire, which is a really obnoxious dubstep track with a reggae beat to it, which is kind of odd. If you've never heard it, I encourage you to listen to it. It's a cool tune. I did Showtech Cannonball on there, which is another hardcore, I guess, dubstep style track. I did some Giorgio Moroder from the last album, Right Here, Right Now, with him and Kylie Minogue. I did a couple, yeah, a lot of stuff. And there were some tunes that I played that I could really hear cool stuff. And that was something I did want to mention if we were going to bring this up at all. If you have an okay sound system, I don't mean a junk sound system. I mean, a fine, a JBL system or whatever. And you have perhaps an older track that isn't recorded as well as the newer tracks are, mm-hmm, you can kind of tell a difference. It's like, you know what? The newer track sounds a little better than the older track through my speakers. When you've got a more refined system, I guess, you can really tell the difference. Like, it's night and day difference. Instead of like this, marginal, well, yeah, that'll be fine. There's a big difference. So when you go with something perhaps a little more premium than what maybe you're accustomed to, the quality of your files make a big difference, a huge difference, because that then becomes the weakest link in your audio chain.
For sure. Yeah, especially if you're using a controller, so you're getting going from your source digitally to the controller, converting to a high-quality signal going to the speaker.
Right. Yeah. Well, a controller, anything that's MIDI, if you've got a MIDI sound card, be it a controller or a mixer or whatever the mm-hmm. case might be, if you're going digital into, makes all the difference in the world. But yeah, there were some tracks that and Blanca was getting annoyed with me. And I wanted to bring this up too. And this is separate, but not like I mentioned before, 24K Magic really sounded nice in that system. And I kept making adjustments, and I was listening for things. And as a DJ, am I alone on this? And chime in the chat room. I'm not watching the chat room now. John is.
Yep.
And John, please let me know. Is it a DJ thing to listen to the same song over and over and over again and absorb it?
Okay. It is for me, especially when I'm tweaking a sound system and wanting to go, okay, wait, can I make that right. sound a little better?
Right. And not only that, but when you're like previewing tracks, or maybe when you're getting ready to do a show, or you're, I guess, preparing to mix the track, you just want to know everything about the song. You don't want anything to be a mystery or a surprise to you when you're mixing, or you're doing lights, even if it's just switching them on and off. You want to know the song intimately.
Yes.
So you listen to it over and over again, and it's not something that gets old particularly. It just becomes absorbed. That is a very, very much a DJ thing. I assumed it was. I thought maybe it was my weird thing, but I think it's a DJ thing. So she called me out on it, and I told her, you know what? You need to get a job and leave the house once in a while so I can just be me and not be criticized for being me, because I want to listen to the same track 30 times over and over again. That's just what DJs do in their spare time. And she, of course, laughed and walked out of the room because she thought I was joking.
I was wondering if you were going to get slugged or if you...
No, she thought I was kidding. She laughed and walked out of the room. I meant it. Get the hell out of here once in a while. I need to be able to do this kind of shit. So, like I said, this is not the same stuff you're seeing on the videos. So
these are our nights to hang out and chat, hit up topics here and there. And as Howie has mentioned, every once in a while we drop there's a nugget of something that you guys can use. And
yeah, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Sometimes you got to pay real close attention.
Now I had brought the laptop and one of the controllers into the house as we were practicing and such with some songs, because there were a couple of songs I wanted to hit the mix at a specific time. So it was back up, you know, probably about four, maybe eight majors, what have you. So you're getting that timing down. And okay, no, that didn't work. Let's try this. That didn't work. And the kids are like, okay, I'm sick of this song. Well, yeah, but
I'm not DJing for you, kid.
This is what I have to be able to, I need to be able to hit this and hit it right. And first song, it just didn't, the two didn't feel right after you.
Right.
It's like in my head, it sounded right, but not when you heard it. So that we'll adjust.
I mean, most of the time I'm doing this with headphones on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm testing out a line array.
Precisely. So it's
give me a break. I know I'm in the living room. Blanca was kind enough to move the parakeet away from where it was hanging there in the threshold between the living room and the dining room into the kitchen for a while. So I didn't deafen my parakeet. But yeah, it's been an interesting day.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Brian, what I wanted to talk a little bit is I've had a couple more people asking over the last couple of weeks, and this is a topic that there's probably others out there who have had this situation where they have gone and they have been approached, or they are approaching a bar or a club and they would like to go and pick up, you know, especially during a slow time of the year, they're wanting to pick up a show here or there. And they're hearing from, and I've even heard it locally from one of our small bars, is basically, you know, okay, we'll hire you, but what kind of a crowd can you bring in? What is your, what is your reach and such? And that's something that, and we've talked a little bit about this in some of our other shows and such, but I just wanted to open it up for the chat room, and you and I we can talk about a little bit about what a person can do in this day and age, to maybe help get the word out and to get the following, And do DJs have, you know, at your or my level, you know, do we have a following anymore?
I think we create one. It's something that takes time. I mean, back in the old days, I never had anybody ask me, well, who are you going to bring into my club? The goal was to keep who you have.
Right.
That was always my objective. Let's keep who you have. Let's keep them there for as long as we can. And let's get them good and thirsty. And let's make them want to come back next week and bring their friends. So, I mean, anybody who even suggests that, you know, I had any kind of responsibility with that, I guess I would just make it real clear to them that this was going to take time. Yeah. This is something that you're going to realize in a week or 2 weeks. You got to give this 6 weeks to 3 months to really realize any kind of improvement. It's not going to be an overnight success. That's just the way I always approached it. But there are opportunities out there to go on social media and create some hype, and you can even do ads and target ads and all that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, if you think about it, sometimes what these places are really looking for is a promoter.
Yes.
And that's a different pay scale, as far as I'm concerned, than a DJ.
Yeah, for sure. I could definitely see that. And of course it's a completely different realm of responsibility.
And if someone were to approach me and say, well, who are you going to bring into the club? I wouldn't say, well, I don't, I would say, well, whoa, okay, wait a minute. So you want a promoter too, right? And if they say no, then you say, well, you just want a DJ. Then, okay, then I don't need to worry about bringing anybody to the club. I just need to keep them there. Mm-hmm. When you bring them in, you need a promoter. Can I promote? Yes, I can promote. No matter what, the answer is yes. By the way, if they ask, yeah, of course I can bring people. It's going to take time, but I can bring people in.
Yep.
This is what I need you to do first. It's kind of like what we talked about last week. You got to give them things to do until they finally just say, oh, and you went, never mind. Because they are going to have to do some things. You're going to need some artwork. You're going to need some promotional materials from them. You can create your own, I guess, but my name's on something. I want approval. I want to know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe some drink specials. They're going to have to make some changes at the bar. You become a promoter at that point. It's not just a position of a DJ. Yeah, and a lot of people are DJ promoters.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We see some of our friends who do a wonderful job of that.
Yeah.
But I think you make a great point where you're talking that the club, beyond paying the promoter or the DJ or the promoter DJ, that they're going to have a little bit additional skin in the game to build.
Oh, yeah.
Crowd. And I think there's a lot of bars that I've talked to over the years who are like, we need to do something, you know, on our Thursday nights. And, you know, can you come in here and do, you know, whatever? And it's like, okay, great. Well, what are your thoughts? How are you going to reach out and get the word out? Well, we figured that, you know, you would have the ability to draw people in.
At that point, I would ask for a percentage of bar. Absolutely. That belongs to me. If I'm bringing people in and I'm putting footwork in, I get a percentage of bar.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it is. Plus, I get a guarantee. I get a guarantee in percentage.
Yeah. And then
the lower the guarantee, the higher the percentage. So if they want to come to me and they want to say something like, well, yeah, we can't pay you $250 a night. All we can do is $150. Okay, then I don't want 10%. I want 15%.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Above and beyond a threshold, of course. You don't take every penny they have. You let them earn what they typically are doing, and then above and beyond what they normally do, you get the percentage.
For sure. That was actually something one of the managers at the bar that I was the house DJ at for a long time, when he took the job, that was one of the things he had asked, because their paperwork was so poor from manager to manager that he didn't know. And he's like, so do you guys, you know, is it a flat fee? Do you do a flat fee and a percentage of the bar? And how do you do all of these different things? And as he and I became friends and such, that was a recommendation he had. He goes, you know, on a night when you're not here, we'll do $750 in sales. On a night when you're here, we'll be doing between $2,000 and $3,000 in sales,
right,
on a weeknight.
Right.
And of course, just doing a 10% above, you know, the 700 would make for a nice little payday.
Sure.
And
absolutely. You need something. If it's a smaller place, maybe you want a little bit of door too, but at clubs anyway, I mean, bars where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally where it's at. You know, 10% of $7,000 is $700.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
For a club gig. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's on the good side. I mean, the most I've ever made at a club, oh, God, a night. I've done a grand. They're specialty nights. They're not every week.
Yeah.
On a week-to-week basis, man, if you're pulling five, you're a rock star, five a night. Typically, I think people are somewhere really between 150 and maybe 2.25. And that's honest.
Yeah.
That's because when you talk to DJs about what they make, you got to subtract a pretty nice percentage of that to get it to a number that's in reality most of the time.
Yep.
It's a DJ thing. And I don't even blame anybody. It's just part of the business. They all lie about what they make.
Well, in my particular case, since I only do a couple of, and I haven't done, you know, in the last year, I haven't done a bar virtually at all because of my fall shows are usually when, and I was busy with other things.
Right.
But my local bar, you know, it's where Lori and I will go out for dinner and such. And it's somewhere around at $2 to $2.50, depending upon what I'm doing. Now, mm-hmm, I go to a couple of other spots and there's one that'll pay $4 and one that'll pay $6.
Right.
But I don't care to go do those because some nights are great, some nights are eh, and it's nothing, right, I can control because they don't bring you in consistent enough, which is another problem.
Right.
I know William up here mentioned that the, you know, the bar once doesn't bring him back because he doesn't bring in people. Well, it's tough to do that if you're coming in, you know, once every month or every 2 months. Yeah. It's yeah. really difficult because you can't build a...
It's like a Kirby vacuum cleaner salesman. Sold all your family and friends and then they'll fire you. Yeah. Or if you can't, then you don't have a job. No, I think, you know, when it comes to those kind of situations, when it comes to a situation where they're looking at you to essentially do promotion, not only do they owe you more money, but you need to be very selective of the bar that you choose to work with.
Yes.
Because your money now depends on someone else to do their job too. So if I go out and I successfully promote at Dave's bar and I get a lot of people in Dave's bar and his bartenders are morons, they're acting stupid, they're not getting the people served, they're being rude, the door guy is a knob, there's no toilet paper, nobody's cleaned the bathroom, there's been puke in there for 2 hours, who's going to come back? It doesn't matter who I bring into the place, they're not going to come back. I mean, unless I'm amazing, you know, but you need to work with people who are going to work with you. So at that point, I feel like you really need to be selective who you work with. You know, they start interviewing you about this kind of stuff, I would start interviewing them.
Yeah.
Who's your staff? Well, you know, but I have never, should I say never? Should I say never?
Never's a
one time. One time I worked a club that I'd never been to.
Okay.
One time. I got called out of the blue, and I wasn't familiar with the place. I didn't last long. I wouldn't have picked it. It was really awkward, and it wasn't me. But every other place I've ever worked, I mean, I attended, mm-hmm. had a beer, met some people. Kind of poked around. I don't go in and when I go to clubs and things, I try not to go in, or even back then, I didn't necessarily go in and just pick them apart, but I did notice things. And usually the owner and I would get to know each other just on a customer level. I wouldn't even let him know what I did.
Right.
And if he would say something out of frustration, I was like, well, you know, it's actually what I do. Really? Yeah. What would you do? And I went, oh, maybe this. Oh, wow. Really? Yeah. And then like, well, we want to come down some. Sure. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do a night. Let's try it. And all the good bars that I've ever worked at, or clubs, they know what their week's going to look like because they keep a book. And after a collection of data over a certain amount of years, be it 5 years or 10 years or 30 years, they can kind of tell you what each week of the year is going to look like and what those days are going to look like of those weeks too, on average. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some screwballs here and there, but they know we can expect to do this day. Next week, Wednesday, we're going to expect a little more than normal, so I'm going to bring in an extra cocktail waitress. But then on Thursday, it's going to drop, so I'm going to send two home. I'm going to bring them in. They know. I mean, those are the people you want to work with. They got it together.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I wouldn't mind doing promotion for. And I think I could make some money with them. And I have made money with those people. But
sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I know, like, where I live in, like, the cool little neighborhood, you know, the little Brooklyn of Milwaukee, I guess. And there's a lot of bars, lounges, and things like that. And the people who are running them, and I hate to sound catty, but I think they were gifts from their parents.
Okay.
Because they don't know what they're doing. They just kind of throw things against the wall and hope they stick. And a lot of them have been quite successful. But then when they petition for something, like there's a bar up the road, you can't smoke here in the bars anymore. And that's pretty much the same thing about everywhere you go.
Now, yeah.
So what they wanted to do was they had the space, a little bit of space. They wanted to put a beer garden outside. And they thought, well, you know, how about a beer garden? And it'll only be open until 9 o'clock. It's just an addition, something that might bring people in for a happy hour or something. And they petitioned the city to do this. And there was a I guess, a town hall meeting on it where, you know, they kind of expressed what their case was and all that stuff. And the alderman said, look, you guys, you're doing a hell of a job. I'm really impressed what you've done with the place. And I think you got a real future in this business, but no, you can't have a beer garden. So, but why? Well, because there's no parking as it is for residents on the street with the people you're bringing in. If you open a beer garden, you're going to boost up your capacity. And by boosting your capacity, you're going to have less parking for people coming home from work.
Sure.
Now, instead of that bar saying to themselves, maybe we should consider what can we do to help this parking situation, to help the neighborhood and help us? Mm-hmm. How can we be good neighbors and still get what we want? The alderman basically said, hey, come up with a new plan. And they never did. So those are not the people I want to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, on the surface, they're doing well, but politically, they don't know what they're doing. And they're just green, I guess. And to this day, they have no beer garden. Now, if they would come up with a solution, and I'm sure there is a solution they can come up with to fix this problem, they could probably have it.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to do business with people who do business well, I guess. That's my way of looking at it, I guess.
Matt mentioned that he was a DJ in a club for a while, and that he had built up a nice following and was very, the bar was very busy. And then when he left, he moved away, that the DJ that took over, of course, had a, you know, lost the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very, very common.
Yeah,
especially it is. When you have a DJ who's been there day and day after day, you get people who are coming because of your personality and the music style.
Yeah.
When I took over at the Holiday Inn up there, I was a much better DJ than the guy ahead of me, and I could mm-hmm. do things that he couldn't, but I was different.
You still lost him.
I lost his crowd. Yep.
But you had to bring your own in.
And that's, yeah, in time. And it took,
yeah.
Oh goodness gracious, it probably took 3 months and
yep.
And such to do that, which at that time, the manager had enough common sense to basically say, once he found out he auditioned 3 different DJs and I was the third, and he's like, yeah, I'm done auditioning. You're going to get the job, but it's going to take us a while, he said.
He knew, yeah.
And he had enough sense to know that. And
yeah, those are the people you want to work with. They get it.
For sure.
They get it. And it's, I was a very, very, very cocky young DJ. I did what I wanted to do. I didn't listen to what anyone told me to do because I thought it was stupid. And I would tell them I thought it was stupid. Wasn't very diplomatic about that. I don't know why they put up with me, but they did. And I had a great run with these people and really, I guess I miss those days. Those were good days. But yeah, I got lucky. I got lucky. It would have been better if we would have had a more open dialogue about things and I would have been able to say, hey, you know, I want to try this and, you know, maybe been a little more diplomatic about it perhaps, but yeah. I was a cocky kid. Thought I knew every damn thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was good, though. I say that not... I was really good for my age. Very, very good. And I was confident, and I knew what people wanted.
That was huge.
You know? I knew. We had... The place I worked was... and it's still around. The original... The founder just died, and he was like 84.
Oh, my.
Yeah. He just died and a big corporation took it over about a year ago, a major corporation. They're like the biggest hotel hospitality management company in the country. And they happen to be based here in Milwaukee. They also own a resort, which I also worked at, but it was an independently owned place. And it was a spy bar, like a James Bond themed bar established in 1966.
Okay.
So Sean Connery.
Around that.
Very 60s Mahari rooms, you know, that kind of decor.
Sure.
And I was there at a very unique time in history because the place had not been remodeled. It was kind of a joke, but it was a tourist attraction. And people would go there just because they'd heard about it. And there were goofy little things, like there was secret entrances and passwords and Manahari rooms and weird, weird, weirdo stuff in this place. There were secret exits. You go to a certain payphone and you put a quarter in and a secret door opens. You go through these passageways and neat place. It's still there. If you ever come to Milwaukee, come to a place called Safe House. It's still there. It's actually on the same street I live on. It's just a couple miles that way, right downtown. But anyway, I was there before Austin Powers was big, which brought all the 60s nostalgia spy stuff back.
Oh, yes.
So whoever was the DJ there in 1998 had it made because it was cool again. But when I was there, it wasn't cool. It was a tourist bar. So if you had a convention in town, they came. Anybody who came to town, any rock star or whatever, would come to our place because they knew we had a lot of different rooms. And it was kind of a maze in there. If they wanted to disappear, they could. David Copperfield used to come in all the time with Claudia Schiffer. I knew David. Mark Hamill, I met like everybody in ELO one night. They just came in one night.
Wow.
Paul Schaefer came in. Everybody came in that place who came and played Milwaukee. And no, but what I did was something that they'd never seen. They'd never seen regulars. I mean, not in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. They had never seen regulars at that bar. It was always tourists. In conventions that were in town or an after party for a festival or something. But I had regulars on the nights that I played.
Yeah.
And they came in droves. And they didn't know what hit them. They had no idea. So what is this? Now there's lines at the doors. What's going on? Why are there lines at the doors? Well, because people want to come and see. Because I was doing something nobody else in town was doing. I was doing house and retro 80s, and nobody was doing that. They were either doing like, you know, energy or something. I did that too, but I did this other stuff. And I really had a don't give a shit attitude, and they liked that. And I was very obnoxious on the microphone as well.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of developed my whole, that's where I went from kind of the old school radio announcer type broadcast guy to kind of who you're talking to right now. I developed that working at that club, and people liked it, and they could come and hang out with me. I had my own little section, so I wasn't like untouchable. You could hang out with me and have a beer with me or whatever, because I had a little bar in front of me. Cool place. But yeah, they knew what they were doing. It was really cool, and I was able to bring those regulars in, and I did all right there. I didn't retire from the money I made there, obviously, but I did okay.
Yeah,
for the time. You know, at the time I did fine. Yeah, it's tough out there. It's tough out there for it because there's so many DJs. And I think you've got basically people who know what's going on, people who don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And you want to work with somebody who either doesn't know what's going on and trusts you or knows what's going on and works with you.
And that gets to be really tough because sometimes, especially with, as you mentioned, when you went and worked for that one where they didn't, you hadn't done a walkthrough or you hadn't met them prior to.
That was a nightmare.
On a phone, it's almost impossible because they can all sound like they know what the hell they're talking about on the phone. And then when you get there and see how they work with their staff and how the room is just after the dinner rush, and you can see that, oh my gosh.
This place was so weird. It was on the fashionable east side. I live on the South Shore, which is cool now. I mentioned that before. Back then, it wasn't cool. South Shore has only been cool for a few years. Now everybody wants to live here. But the east side, that's always been cool. That's UWM neighborhood, the university, all the high-rise condos are there overlooking the bluff on the lake, all that stuff. So it was like, it was one of the first ultra lounges I ever went to.
Sure.
I mean, it was an early ultra lounge. It was called Dragon Lounge, and it wasn't hipster. It was cool kids, but it was really odd because the DJ booth was behind the bar, and I was dodging bartenders. There were coolers under my feet, and I would have to move when I'm mixing, so somebody could get a Budweiser out.
Oh, gee.
Right, and they had a dance floor and they had lights, but they did not have a cabaret license. And if you don't know what that is, kids,
yep, tell us about that.
Yeah, the cabaret license has to do with dancing. So, I mean, if somebody gets up and dances in the middle of McDonald's, I suppose there's nothing McDonald's can do about it. But if McDonald's starts promoting, hey, we're going to have a Club McDonald's, they have to have a cabaret license to allow that to happen. They can still play music. And they can still have room to dance, but they can't particularly encourage or promote dancing. It's really bizarre, but it's about cabaret license. And I think it goes back to the whole show thing way, way, way back with stage performances and things like that.
Of course, not every state, many of them have this, but not all of them.
Right. Everybody does it a little different, but Wisconsin, you got to have a cabaret license for this. So Dragon Lounge did not have a cabaret license, but they had a dance floor and they had lights. So I was supposed to get them almost to dance, but if they danced, I was not doing my job.
You had to change it up.
I had to change it up if they danced. If I made them too happy, I got in trouble. Yeah. And it paid incredibly well. This place paid obscenely well for, oh God, I don't know what year that was. That must have been like 98, 99. It was insane money, but just stupid. And they were all just either college students or recent college grads. Mm-hmm. There were five owners. Yeah.
Interesting.
I've never been there. If I'd have been there and they said, hey, you want a DJ here? I'd have said no.
Yes.
But I get this call. Hey, we really need somebody. We heard you're good and you're available. And I'm like, well, yeah, sure. What could go wrong? Yeah, it was a strong fit. It happens.
Just following the chat room here.
I'm probably going way, way, way.
No, that's
far with my rattling on tonight.
Yeah, it's quite all right now.
But, you know, I'm on no sleep.
Yeah, if you guys have got any questions, I've been kind of following the chat room here to see if there's anything that we needed to add and such to the conversation. So please throw any questions you guys have in there. One thing I'm seeing a little bit in our area, and I'm going to include the extended area where I get into some larger towns, cities, what have you, where we get into 50 to 100,000 population, is that we're just not seeing as many places playing or having a DJ for a dance type party. Mm-hmm. Back in the 90s, as an example, where I was at on a Saturday night, there would be for public performance probably five different DJs DJs playing. Now, in the summertime, there might be pushing 10 because it was a vacation area. Now you won't find maybe more than two.
The whole city of Milwaukee, really, we got a small handful these days. It's just the trend.
Yeah.
And it's how people meet. I mean, back in the 90s, and even, I had this little pocket of time in the early 2000s where I was single. So I was out again. And there was stuff happening, and that's where you met people.
Yep.
I met Blanca at a salsa club. It's no longer a salsa club, but I met her at a Latin club of all things, which, of course that's where you meet Puerto Rican women at salsa clubs. But that's how you met people. They don't do that anymore. They meet on Facebook and they see on the Twitter feed or whatever. I know it's like a 100-year-old man, but that's how it works now.
Very much so.
The social media is how you're social. So,
and then you look at the crowds that when Lori and I've gone out a few times to go out for dinner, we go out for kind of a late dinner and we'll be, planning to be out from, 7 to 11 so we can hit a couple of spots. There are times, and now I'm 48. There are times where I'm the youngest person in some of these bars.
Yeah.
And it used to be that when I was in my 30s, I was not the youngest person. There were people, the 20s, and you just don't see people in their 20s and not, sometimes not even in their 30s that are going out like they used to.
Yeah. Now, here, let me ask you this. You and I both have a 19-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Okay, does your kid have any interest in going out and dancing?
Not a bit.
Mine either.
Not a bit.
Mine. And I tried to tell my kid about this club life I was into, and she's like, why would you want to do that? Yeah,
for sure. And then my next, which is a sophomore in high school, he and his buddies, I mean, it was when we were young, it was like, oh gosh, we're going to go out. And there was a pool table at one of the separate clubs. And right. If we stayed back in the pool room, in the game room, we could be there and we could be out and we could get our pizza and French fries and hang out all night in the bar. Now we couldn't drink, but you know, we could,
doesn't matter.
We were in, you know, in
a bar, a big person place.
My sophomore and his buddies, which are he's a sophomore, junior and senior, the other kids in his circle, they're happy as all get out to sit on their computers and they're playing these interactive games or these multi-person games on their headsets, and they're chatting away and giggling and laughing and yelling. And this goes on until 2 a.m. at our house.
Yeah.
On weekends. Yeah. It's they're having a great time. And it's like, gosh, I don't know if I'm not sure if it's a bad thing or a good thing. You know,
it's a different thing.
It's a
different thing. And I do predict that I don't know when it's going to happen exactly, but sometime before too long, going out again is going to become this new thing.
It definitely could be.
It's going to happen. It's going to be like the whole hipster thing now.
Well, an interesting thing I saw is that there are some places, coffee shops, that are bringing in live entertainment, but doing it during the day.
Yeah.
And that's when you see a picture of it, and it's the coffee shop is full of people in their 20s and 30s having coffee, checking email, doing basically and enjoying the music.
Yeah.
It's just, it's different.
I got a joint like that, 5 houses that way. And that's what they do. They've got acoustic performers that come in there and do things, maybe a duo, maybe a solo artist. And it's during the day or in the early afternoon. Or maybe even, you know, dinner time sometimes.
Brolance has got a great question. Question is, why would a reputable DJ consider a bar gig?
I'll tell you why. And I had this conversation with my friend David Ellsworth, who was on the show about a month and a half ago. And David's 63 years old. So he is a published musician. He writes music for a living.
Yes.
For a living, he writes music.
Very talented man.
His wife is an opera singer. I mean, you know, the whole family, his son is doing music for like British movies and things. It's crazy. But he doesn't talk about that with me. He talks about DJing with me because that's our thing we have in common. But anyway, I had mentioned to Dave that, you know, hey, why don't you do it? Because he's talking about this new music he wants to play. And I said, you should get a bar gig.
Yeah.
And he says, it's a waste of my time. It has nothing to do with what I want to do. I want to be a wedding DJ. And I want to, you know, do the mobile thing and cater to the corporate. The bar is a waste of my time. And I said, well, hold on a minute. I said, look, I understand that you're not going to make the money at a bar gig that you're going to make on your mobiles. And Dave does run what I would consider a premium service.
Sure.
He's getting about what you're getting for what he does. And he goes above and beyond. He's very good. But I told him, I said, look, the bar has merit for one thing is this. This is where you are going to polish your chops.
Yes.
In a way that you never imagined you were going to be able to polish your chops. Today, if someone called me and said, I have a wedding Saturday, I give you $12,000 to come and do it. Of course, I'm going to do it. I would do it. I would have notes. I would have notes on what the danceable current top 40 was in front of me because I would need those notes.
Yes.
If I were doing a bar gig or a lounge gig, I don't know, maybe once or twice a week, even like during the week on a stupid day like Tuesday when you're not doing anything else except watching the show. man, I wouldn't need that cheat sheet. I would be able to play stuff outside of that box.
Yeah.
That would blow the crowd away because I would be so acclimated to it week after week after week. This is the best way. If you're interested in being a successful business person, if what you want to do is just make dough, then maybe you don't want to do bar gigs. That's okay if that's what you want to do. But if you are into the craft of what we do, if you really love what we do, and you want to become a, not a better MC, which you probably will be anyway, but a better DJ.
Yes.
This is where you get your bar gigs and your club gigs. That's why you bother. That's why it's worth your while, because you get so freaking good. You go from I'm good to something beyond that. You're not just the average DJ anymore.
You made a great point. And I didn't even make the whole idea of the list. When I was doing the club thing, I never had a list. We just didn't.
No, I didn't either.
And I used to make fun of some of the, he's got a list of some song sets, because it was second nature to us. Oh, right. Hey, wow. I know that this and this and this and this, and I know exactly where everything is. I mean, this is back when we had the rows upon rows of CDs and we were able to do this and do it quickly. Right. Now, as you say, you know, this past weekend had a high school dance and I'm out there and I had gone through and did my music prep and such, where I went through and had the list of what here I should do. I put everything into a playlist on virtual. So if I, you know, can move what, you know, if I'm brain locked, I can, one will fit and it matches. So we just didn't need that when we were doing it all the time. So definitely a great point. No. I think the other side of it that I would look at is when I was doing so many shows, not only of course getting better with that, but I was being seen by a lot of people. And once I developed a local crowd, I became the DJ when it came time to, you know, hey, I know a DJ who could do your wedding.
Yeah.
It was huge.
John does weddings. Oh my gosh, John does weddings. Yeah. Oh. Can I get gotta go talk to John, get a card.
Yeah. I mean, the first two or three years I was doing occasional Saturday, after that I was doing, you know, weddings pretty much throughout the year. I was picking up even November weddings, which for us is, you know, woohoo, that's gold, because you don't get those. So we were doing season weddings and then some corporate things, because again, some people, they'd leave work and they would come in and they were having their little party and they're like, hey, wow, this guy's really quite good.
Now, I mentioned the spy bar that I worked at, and people know it, you know. I mean, it's kind of like it's an institution, you know.
Yes.
And everybody, you know, knows somebody who's been there, and some people say they think they know the password, but they're not sure, and their friends told them what the password was, so they're interested in going. And my point of this is when I would have a client call me out of the blue and just pick me out of an ad or a referral or whatever. So, well, can we come see a wedding that you do? I would say, well, you know, I don't do that. And the reason I don't do that is because I would never invite anybody to your wedding. You know, that just would be in bad form. But I tell you what I can do. Why don't you let me put you on the VIP list at the club? What club? Well, I work at Safe House. Oh my God, I've always wanted to go there. Come on down, I'll put you on the list. You come on down Friday, I'll have you on the list. If there's a problem, you just tell the door person, Brian said you were on the list, and they'll come back and get me, and I'll bring you right in.
Right.
And every time that somebody would show, I would never put anybody on the list, but they would knock on the door, and they'd say, Brian, you have a guest. And there was a little secret door that I could go straight to the front door from the DJ booth that nobody knew about. So I would open the door, and I would escort them in, kind of the, you know, sneak them in kind of thing, the back door, past the, you know, the amp racks and the DJ booth and the coat racks and out into the club they were. No cover charge, no waiting in line, nothing. And they would just say, so would we sign a contract? What do we do? They wouldn't even hear me DJ. They wouldn't care, but that gave me credibility.
For sure.
Because I could get them into the club. And I can get anybody in who wanted. You know, anybody who wanted, they didn't pay a cover if they knew me. So that was a cool bonus for that too. I could kind of field off those, can we see you do somebody else's wedding
thing?
Yes,
there were numerous times I had people stop out, and it backfired on me a few times also, because I'm performing that night. Our schedule was Wednesday night was country night, And there were times I had people come out and they would listen and such, and then I wouldn't hear from them. And then within a follow-up phone call later, they're like, yeah, we went with someone else. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't, is there something? And they're like, yeah, we just didn't want a DJ who plays country music all night. But that was the format of the night.
Or, you know, that was always my concern too. Yeah. And I would tell them initially, look, please understand, this is not someone's wedding. You're coming into a club. I don't know what's going to be happening.
Yes.
So just please keep that in mind. I'm not doing my wedding show when you come to the club. I'm doing my club gig. Oh no, we understand. Okay, fine. That's cool. All they wanted to do was make sure I wasn't a serial killer.
Precisely.
You know, that's really what they wanted to know. Is this guy nuts? Is he scary? Is he creepy? Who is this guy? And as soon as they see you and they see that you're legit and they hear your voice on the microphone, like,
So in your time when you were performing, and you probably, I don't know if you got into doing games, because we had some nights where we would do a lot of games with, you know, that, hey, we're going to do our we're giving away a bucket of beers and we're going to have the winner do, you know, the person do whatever.
Yeah.
Of all the things in my time in the bar, I have gotten more referrals and more, you know, hey, can I get a card, came from those nights we were doing some of these games. And if the games were the raunchier the games, and I know this is, but those were the ones where people would come up. And granted, there's a line of how,
of course,
but there was the nights, you
know, the line was a little different back then.
Yeah, it definitely. For one thing, there wasn't the cell phone where everyone was taking a picture of
exactly
and sharing it. So, you know, everyone would have to talk about, oh my gosh, did you see that? You know, that when they did the contest and you asked for something that they're wearing, but no one can see. And
right. People used to say silly stuff like, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Can you imagine?
Yeah, precisely. That was the old
days. That was the old days.
Yeah, now everything's gone. But yeah, the interacting with the crowd definitely, with the games was a big thing for me. Music play wise, if I were playing older music, and this would have been in the 90s, so if I were mixing in some 70s music or even some 60s music into a set and doing it successfully and keeping a dance floor going with a combination, there were numerous nights where somebody's coming up there and saying, hey, that was awesome. Do you do weddings?
Yeah.
So it was the exposure for myself was a great thing, because that was during that time where we went from myself being the DJ and Lori being my second to, by about halfway through that, we were doing the 16 shows. And it was mainly because we, with that exposure, were able to really kind of take over the town, for lack of a better way to describe it.
But everybody walked in the door for that reason was a potential client.
Yes.
And you treated them right.
Yes.
You know,
until crap
as long as they were morons, if they were morons, you had them thrown out.
Yeah, exactly. But there was once they started to crap on you for some reason, then it's like, yeah, no, our time here is done. There's the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Butch, come here. I got right here.
Yeah. That happened. Actually, we had a cocktail waitress. The bouncers were young men who were taking their classes at the local police officer academy or whatever they had there at the college. But if we wanted someone gone, it was like, yeah, Missy. And she's this little 5'2", and she would come up there, and she took 6'4", 270-pound guys out the door.
Can we take a minute on this? Because I don't know if this still exists, but there was like a ninja quality to certain people who worked in bars that they never talked about, but they were superhuman. They were. There was this fat guy named Juan, one of the bartenders. Juan, fat Juan, nice guy. I mean, you know, little cocky, I guess, but just kind of fat, lethargic Juan, you know. And I just can think of so many occasions where Juan hurdled the bar and tackled people, grabbed them, and threw them out the door that were twice the size. What's with that? Where does that come from? Who does that? Yeah. And I never saw a patron overtake a bar staff person. Never happened. They dove in there like ninjas.
Yes. Fearlessly. And it was like, oh my gosh.
Was it a 90s thing? Because I haven't seen that.
No.
Now if something happens, ooh, we better call the police.
Precisely.
Right. Back then, no. Didn't matter. And these people, I wasn't afraid of these people. I thought, yeah, I could take them. Yeah, no, couldn't take them. And they would go from like 0 to 100, like bam, they were there, and that must have been a phenomenon of the past. I don't think it happens anymore.
No, I would agree, because a couple of years ago when I was playing in the bar there the one night, and two guys got into it, and the only thing that happened was the owner of the bar yelling across the bar, "Take it outside," as they were scuffling back and forth, and the two girlfriends finally got in there and separated them long enough to get one of them outside, and then the second one followed, and you know, whatever happened out there. Thankfully, it was away from my vehicle, which was out back, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there would have been employees jumping in the midst of that, but I don't know if.
And they never said anything. They just did it.
Yep.
It wasn't discussed. It wasn't mentioned afterward. And there may or may not have been a bouncer that night, but Fat Juan behind the bar got to that guy a hell of a lot faster than the bouncer would have.
Yeah.
And handled it like a boss. I don't know, man.
Yeah. And I've often wondered why Missy was so effective at breaking up fights, because she would, you know, two big guys are ready to go, and she comes flying out of nowhere, launches herself off a chair, and lands on the two of them. And before the
arms behind their backs, and escorts them out. Yeah. Nobody gets hurt.
And she's like, how did she do that?
John, I don't know. And I thought maybe you knew. I thought there was something, you know, there was a thing that nobody let me in on, because I was the guy who wouldn't do cocaine with anybody. So nobody wanted to hang with me. I wasn't cool. I mean, and that's true. In those days, that's what was happening. And I wasn't the guy who you could do drugs with. So I didn't get let in on some of the things.
Sound Obsession mentioned, they do raunchy type games in the bar. It's been so long, it would be one of those things I'd have to sit down and think about. Somebody like, not that Cubby does, but Cubby is one that does a lot more bars and games and such. It would be one that we'd have to have like a group of us get together, because it'd be like, oh yeah, that reminds me of this that I used to do. Cause it's
the first lounge I ever worked at. I was 18 years old. It was in, a brand new Best Western Executive Inn. They had just opened. It was when the outlet malls were a thing. They just happened. And they built this big outlet mall in Wisconsin. It was the first one anywhere around here in the Midwest, I guess, or in this part of the Midwest. So all these hotels popped up around it, because people from Chicago would come for the weekend to shop at the outlet mall.
Right.
And they'd stay. And they were nice places. So they had a lounge. And one of the things that I did, and we're talking 1989. I mean, you know, so this, you know, a few years ago, but one of the things that I used to do there, and it wasn't raunchy at all, but I would do a trivia thing. If we kind of felt like the people were not feeling included, we would try to include them by doing the most obvious trivia in the world. Yep. You know, whoever is the first person to come up and tell me who plays the next song I'm about to put on, you're going to have a free drink of your choice. And we called it funny money. We had like gambling, but it was for fun. It wasn't like, you know, and you know, maybe $20 of free funny money for the first person to tell me the song. You pop an Elvis track on like that, you know, like, oh, Elvis. Oh yeah. Congratulations. What's your name? Betty. Oh, Betty. Hi. Welcome. You here with your husband, Fred? Oh, hey, Fred, how are you? I'm Brian, I'm the DJ. And then we got them involved, and then they felt included, and then they hung out longer, and then they gambled. And so that's what I remember doing. And I haven't done that in years, because I guess I kind of graduated from that type of venue and moved on to what we used to know as Clubland. You know, not super club like Vegas, but Clubland, you know. And it was cool that I was able to make that jump. That was the goal. That was the end all. That's the only plan I had for life at that point, was, you know, besides conquering women, was be the DJ at the club. Above and beyond that, I had no plans for my future. I was like, well, I'll be a veterinarian someday. No, I'm just going to DJ in the club. That's all I want to do. And sure enough, that's all I ended up doing. So
funny.
But no, that's what I remembered. But it was cool. It was real cool, and it was effective. And it really did get people involved. And then we would do another trivia thing, and somebody else would come up. Oh, hey, did you guys meet Betty and Fred? They're from Boise, Idaho. That's not too far from where you're at, right? Yeah, and then they talk, and then you got a thing going on. And the icebreakers, I guess you'd call them.
Oh, for sure.
More than, you know, just kind of the rounds you gain. I'm sure I did them, but I don't recall anything off the top of my head.
That's what I was, as you're talking about the trivia, one of the things in a bar trivia situation, that was, you know, we'd give away a drink every now and then with that. And you'd have a table of people who were always coming in second, or you know, they were there, they were engaged and they were trying, but they just never had the answer.
They could never do
it. And it got to the point that, okay, I've got this table over here that's winning, you know, one, two or three times, this table of eight. And I don't want to, so this question is for the people right here at this table. I mean, going out that far and making it kind of a humorous,
right.
And then asking something so incredibly simple or something that they should get. And
if we just do a sing along, whoever's the loudest wins, and just, well, yeah, go, just, I can clearly hear you're louder than they are. And
there's so many little things a person can do. And it's a combination of engaging, but it's also showing a little bit of personality. And then people will be like, yeah, I had a good time with John or Brian last Saturday night.
I had great nights as a kid, and I didn't know I was having great nights. I thought they were failures because I didn't have a packed dance floor.
Yes.
But I was having great, I had no idea. And they loved me. And they, oh, can we, I was working 4 or 5 nights a week at this lounge. And I'm like, why do they keep bringing me back? I'm underage. They know it. I don't have big dancing crowds, but they were drinking and they were all socializing. They were staying because I was doing the right stuff. I just didn't know it.
Yes.
So, and if I could only talk to my younger self, you know, sit down. Hey, Brian, sit down. I got some things I got to tell you. Like, I got to tell you, you're just, don't be so hard on yourself. You're on the right track. Just, you know that you're doing the right thing here. Good. But it always made me try very hard.
Yeah.
I was always wanted to, you know, try to up myself every, you know, but it's, but yeah, you look back on it, it's like, oh my gosh, I made those guys so much money. I was the host. Mm-hmm. That's what I was. And whoever came into that place, they stayed.
Yes. And that's so, what our job was at that time and probably still is just the opportunities aren't there like they were at one time for us.
Yeah. I remember back then. I mean, this is just so surreal to think about it. I was so young in the club. It was weird to me if somebody came in who was 21. That was like almost a peer because the crowd was so much older.
Yeah.
You know, and the 50s music was big. And no matter who came in, it was always 50s music or Thin Lizzy or, you know, it was something that wasn't contemporary. And then once in a while, you get this really hot looking Mariah Carey chick coming. It's like, where did you come from? Oh, you're here with your mom. Great. Got a room? No, that didn't happen often. But the point being is, that it was an older crowd I was playing to. It wasn't what I was familiar with. So I had to really develop that empathy thing. And I talk about that all the time, but that's what it was. I had to understand, okay, this isn't for me. This is for them. It doesn't matter that I have a crate of like sweet, sweet house music sitting right here. This is what we're going to do. This is going to be what's going to be the most effective tonight. And it's kind of a cool progression of things in my career. I look back on it and I'm proud of it. It was fun and I had great opportunities and I always had good intentions when I was young. Not always when I got older. And I'm being honest. When I got older, maybe got a little jaded with the whole thing for a while. I'm not that way now, but for a while I think I was. I'm just like, yeah, whatever. But boy, when I was young, that was real cool. That was my college. You know, people talk about, well, I studied at the university. No, I studied in nightclubs and bars and lounges and hotels and casinos and downtown establishments for 20 years or more.
And you were performing basically in the Milwaukee area, is that?
Yeah. Mostly Milwaukee. Once in a while, I would get down towards the Illinois border with lounges and things. but I never passed it. I came within a couple miles of it, but I never went over it when it came to bars and lounges and clubs. But yeah, Milwaukee and the city too. There was one I did in the suburbs for a while, and it's still there. It's called something different now. The same owner's there. I don't believe they have dancing like they used to, but it was new when I was there. That was the first place I ever VJ'd, and I think that was in about 90. I had a VJ gig where we were using Wolfram videotapes.
Yes.
Hi-fi VCRs, those little black and white TVs, those 5-inch screens were our cue monitors.
Yes.
Yep. The motorized drop-down screens, and then like 27 or 32-inch tube televisions all over the place. It was fun. It was real fun. And you'd alternate between, at the time, music video and CD and records. So you were going back and forth between all these things, depending on what you had what on, you know.
Dude, that was big, yeah, because we did not have, certainly not the music video collection we have today.
No, but we didn't have the CD collections we have today, or the MP3 collections we have today. Yeah. Everything was on something different. There were some things you got only have on vinyl, especially in the club. I mean, you could get away with the radio version, maybe on CD somewhere else, but the club, you need this 12-inch version of it. Certain tunes just they weren't out there on CD, or they were not economically viable, perhaps. But yeah, that was an interesting. But everything else was the city, like in downtown or on the east side. Everything was I lived in this, in not even the suburbs. I was beyond the suburbs in the country. My parents still live out there, mm-hmm. where the cows are. But I would come to the city and do that.
Yeah, from my experience, because they were asking about that. And my experience has been through central Minnesota, basically I've performed in some small towns in Wisconsin, through the Minneapolis, St. Paul, up towards Fargo, about halfway through North Dakota over the years, then up to the Canadian border and down into Iowa. But most of my years of playing have been between the cities of Alexandria, St. Cloud, and Brainerd, which are within an hour of our area.
Well, if we're talking about mobiles, I've done Indiana. I've done way, way up north, mm-hmm. like damn near Lake Superior or Upper Peninsula. I've done Iowa. That expands when we're talking at that capacity.
Yeah.
And lots of Chicago over the years. A lot of schools in Chicago, or Chicago suburb schools, a lot of those when I was younger.
Nice.
Like Des Plaines and Schaumburg and places like that. I mean, I was just a staple in those places for a while, the high school and the junior highs. But when we're talking clubs and lounges, it was primarily the city of Milwaukee. It was almost like, I don't know what you would call it. It was maybe an alter ego to want to be the city person, because I always felt like I belonged in the city. I live there now, and I do manage very well here, a lot better than I do out in the country. But I just really had this thing where I just wanted to be here in some capacity or be a part of it.
Yeah.
And man, every car I ever had, I mean, we're talking about probably a 60-mile round trip from where my folks live now, where I lived when I was young, to downtown, like every night. And I was out every night, unless I think Tuesday nights were dead. I don't think there was anything going on Tuesday night except industry nights, and I didn't usually attend industry nights until I got older. Industry nights, if you don't know, those are the nights where the people who work at the bars and clubs go out.
Yes.
and they have industry night specials. So if you work somewhere else, you know, that's where you all, it's kind of like New Year's Eve. You know, people who work in bars and clubs typically don't want to go out on New Year's Eve. They go out the night after because no one's out and they got the place themselves. And it's not amateur night anymore. All the amateurs are hungover. So, yeah, I mean, there were probably a good, if I wasn't working, if I wasn't gigging, I was clubbing on any given night. And if I missed a night at a club, I was devastating to me. Just devastating. Like if I overslept, I'm going to take a nap, and I slept until it was too late to get cleaned up and get into the city and hit the club even for an hour, I would be heartbroken. I felt like I really missed out. It was like a religion for me for a long time. Just that was my thing. And I met so many people. In fact, to this day, one of my best friends, I met her at a club. And she's my daughter's godmother now. So there's some real lasting relationships that I actually got out of that whole thing. Friends.
Certainly.
And it's like, you know, you got a kid the same age as my kid. And my kid just has no interest in that.
And that will be an interesting thing to see how that dynamic plays out. If that continues and it becomes a trend, and how we as DJs, you know, we've had the discussion on other shows that with Drax, you know, that will the DJ be replaced by robots, computers, what have you? And it might be we get to the point where for many DJs, they're going to be replaced just because there isn't a need that our children enjoy internet radio and streaming streaming shows much more than they enjoy the atmosphere of a establishment.
I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at this. I think you can look at it like, okay, this sucks because we're not at bars and clubs like we used to be. But the other way to look at it is anybody looking anywhere else for wedding entertainment? Has there been a replacement for pre-recorded music at a wedding that's a preference? I haven't seen it. Then all of a sudden bringing in a bongo player. People still want DJs for that. And what's cool about that is it really makes it special because they're not used to having it. So maybe they step up a little more than they normally would. Maybe they appreciate it a little more than normally would, even if they don't say anything. Maybe they just, I don't know. Hey, this was really cool. I wasn't expecting much, but I really enjoyed myself. Yeah, Doofus, you should do this like every week because this is what we used to do.
Yes.
But maybe it's a novelty thing where it's like a cool thing. You know, you go out and do it once in a while. Because most of my weddings, I mean, the young crowd, they want to have fun.
For sure.
And I don't know if it's because they're not used to having fun. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's the missing thing that I never really occurred to me. The reason they want to hear their music so bad is because this is the only opportunity that you're going to be able to hear it and dance to it because they don't know where to go otherwise to hear and dance to it. Because maybe there's no place to go.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know. Empathy. Yeah. Always, never enough empathy. Gotta really take other people's, put yourself in their place. And like I said last week, you gotta walk a mile in their shoes.
Yes. Well, Brian, we need to wrap up here. We are pushing.
Mile away from them, and you have their shoes.
And you have their shoes, yes. Makes it much safer that way.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We went over, dude.
That's okay. It was good. It was good. Good chat.
I hope somebody got something out of this one.
Yeah, I think we had a nice little discussion and such. Matt's ready for wedding season. I need a few more weeks, a little bit nicer weather. Yeah, I'm okay with
it. It depends on where you live, I think.
Yeah, precisely.
If you live in the frozen tundra like we do, it's
like... Yeah, some places do shove the money in the jukebox and let it play all night nowadays, or they just... go in and log in and enter their passcode and then it's, free play.
And if they don't want to do that, they'll just put their earbuds in and sit there and listen to their own thing. Who cares about anybody else?
A beer at the, yes.
And who needs to talk to anybody? I got my music. I got my beer.
We're good. Brian, thank you much. Gang, thank you for watching and being with us tonight. We appreciate that. If you didn't get a chance, give us a thumbs up down below because those engagements definitely help on the whole YouTube world. And we really... want to continue to be able to do that, and by doing those things, YouTube shares it, and da da da. It all works together. So,
thanks for putting up with sleep deprived me.
And we'll be back next week, and Brian will be all ready to go and bright eyed and bushy tailed, and with more information on his new sound system. So, we'll catch you then. Thanks for watching. Good night.